This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desire, is not born again into this world.
So one important thing with practice and meditation is finding places of peace. So when we learn to meditate, we can make our time of meditation a place of peace. So then, you know, if for some reason at our time when we're meant to be meditating, we're at an airport or a bus stop, then we can still sit down and be peaceful. Or stand if we don't have a seat. Close our eyes for a bit. Doesn't matter where we are, we can meditate. And so it's, but by cultivating that that peace, that recollection of peace, it means that even if our mind is busy, even if we have thoughts that we can't yet let go of, we can tune into that peace. So our meditation is like, just like if we go off to a quiet forest or have a spot in our garden or a quiet shrine in our house or something, we have places of peace. But we can also start to build an attitude where our meditation is a place of peace. So then by having this, it kind of makes it more like a sacred space where we like have some time out, where we can develop our meditation object or present moment awareness and mindfulness and peace really only arises when there's good qualities in the mind. So by fostering a place where we're trying to cultivate peace will mean that we're heading in the right direction. We don't need complicated teachings to know what peace and tranquility is. But also we don't want so much peace and tranquility that we fall asleep. So, so we have to know how to balance our energy as well. But sometimes when we first start to meditate, you know, we can get very sleepy because meditation is kind of close to sleep. And because the mind is resting. And so it might take a while when we first start to meditate to find our means of how to also brighten the mind. Because a part of meditation, like the Buddha said, is that the mind is luminous. So it's not that we're trying to attach to that luminosity or make the mind luminous, but just by a natural process of instead of the mind straying out into the world of senses and the world of thoughts, it's just content to come back inwards, the mind seeing the mind. And then it's like starts to become more luminous because it's not needing things external from itself. It becomes its own refuge. And that's why the Buddha, when he talks about the Dharma is like the truth, the teachings, the two kinds of Dharma. There's the Dharma which is around, which is used by all people to become better. So that's the Dharma of wholesome qualities. And then there's the Dharma of the Buddha, which is beyond those wholesome qualities, is also learning to use them to purify the mind. So the mind overcomes a kusala karma, like unwholesome actions. And that process of overcoming a kusala karma can be very simple, just by each day looking at our actions and seeing, you know, have our actions been wholesome? Has our speech, our bodily actions, our thoughts, have they been wholesome or unwholesome? And then we start to find what our weaknesses are and what areas we don't have a foundation. And then slowly we start to overcome those difficulties. And trying not to have an all or nothing attitude. When something breaks, we just throw everything out. But actually, actually seeing, oh, okay, you know, I made a mistake in that area. So maybe, you know, after my meditation today, I should sit down and contemplate that and see how I can overcome that particular area. And then the good thing about purifying our actions is it leads to blamelessness. And then when we sit to meditate, we don't have anything to concern our minds because we've been doing the right thing. And we can very easily settle the mind. A lot of the problems we have in life because A, of our actions, and B, we haven't yet learned sense restraint. So our mind is going out after the senses and it's seeking liking in sight, sound, smells, taste, touch, thought, and it's averse to disliking. And it's just kind of like this spasmodic reaction to whatever comes into our sense sphere, and we just react to it. And we think that is, you know, the only way of being, because that's how most people are in the world. But just like you can see, think of like somebody who has perfected the violin, or a woodsman who's perfected making furniture or something like that, like the best in the field, and they dedicate their life to that purpose. You know, when they started, it took them a time to develop that skill. It didn't just happen. And probably prodigy children were doing it in previous lives. But for a carpenter, for example, you know, it might take them 100 bits of furniture before it actually looks like a good chair. You know, it doesn't just become the first bit of furniture they make isn't just going to be wonderful. I mean, sometimes beings have incredible parami, spiritual power already, but they built that up over many lifetimes. But the thing is, we can do that in our own lives. The point is that we just need to not give up. So we need to see what needs to be done and then slowly work in that direction. And as I was saying at lunch today, the two qualities that really help with that are satya, which is truthfulness. Because when we're truthful in our speech, then we have a standard to live by in our own mind and when we're speaking with others. And if we have truthfulness, then that's also a reason for the mind to be bright. And then the second one is determination. And then this is where we can slowly use our power of determination to do things that we wouldn't otherwise do. So that's the gumption of our actions. Because if we just let our mind do whatever it wants, it's just like a kid who wants candy. You know, what's the kid going to do? Mommy, give me candy, give me candy. And if the mother always gives the child candy, what's going to happen? The kid's going to go crazy all of the time. So, and our mind is the same. If we always just let our mind do what it wants, and we don't, because we don't want friction, well, actually that friction, those barriers, are what help us train the mind. But you know, just like a baby learning to walk, we don't have to think that we're an enlightened being and we have to do ridiculous things. We just start where we are. So like a baby has to learn to walk first. And so in our meditation, every time we, in our practice and mindfulness, every time we come to barriers, we just see, oh, okay, we'll just come back to the beginning and see, you know, how do I develop mindfulness? Am I being aware? Do I have good actions? And we just come back to that basic reflection. And when I was first learning meditation, I did one meditation called Chip Peng Klang. It's a Thai meditation. And the idea is that you just sit there and you watch the mind and you make the mind clang. And so whatever sense objects arise, your only thing is to not react to it. So you're just making the mind neutral. And so that was at a point where I'd already done a lot of meditation, but I didn't feel like I had a foundation. And so I did this to help me learn sense restraint, because a lot of the problem from our meditation getting deeper is that our mind will think a thought or hear a sound or something like that, and it will react to it with liking or disliking. And then it'll forget itself and run away. And then 20 minutes later or something, we'll remember that we're meditating again. And so this is a very simple meditation. And so I would do a period of time of this making the mind neutral, 5 minutes or 20 minutes. And then I would do some metta meditation. And I just supplemented that on my breath, on top of my breath meditation practice. And that was... that was very useful, because it's kind of a simple way of learning sense restraint. Because if we don't, like the Buddha said, sense restraint is that the senses, the six senses, including the mind, are like six animals. And when we meditate, or when we're practicing mindfulness, particularly mindfulness of the body, like the breath or physical awareness inside the body, is a form of meditation. And it's like tying those six animals to the post. And just like somebody who trains an elephant, you know, when they first catch the elephant and they start to train it, well, the elephant, because it's wild, may not even want to live. It may prefer not even to eat that food and just die rather than be tied to a post. That's what some wild animals are like. And we have that same resistance in our own mind. It doesn't want to be tied to a post. It doesn't like the idea of having a constraint. So I found that a useful kind of inroad to a foundation, because there's a period of time of making the mind neutral and then a period of time of developing some metta meditation, which is like a way of brightening the heart, building benevolence to ourselves and all beings. And then because there's some joy and happiness in the mind, then it was easier to do the meditation. And then I could meditate more. And then another thing that I used to do is listen, sometimes like listen to a Dharma talk, like the teaching of a teacher who would inspire me. And so when I didn't feel like meditating, I would meditate while listening to a Dharma talk. So then if my mind went off, then, you know, it wouldn't go very far because I had a Dharma talk to listen to. And then, you know, eventually you remember you're meditating and you come back. And so that was a way that I could expand my time of meditating without the mind kind of getting lost in worldly thoughts. And then previously I've spoken of some other teachings like the five ways of dealing with thoughts, which in brief is substitution. This is just my own summary. So we substitute the thought with something better, which is usually what we do with meditation. We go, oh, the mind's off, substitute it back with our meditation object. Mind's off, substitute it back with our meditation object. And then the next one is to, just trying to remember the correct order. Oh, to see the danger in the thoughts. So we just contemplate about it. We say, well, you know, if I think these thoughts for the rest of this meditation, you know, by the end of the meditation, I'm going to be worse off than when I started. I'm going to have wasted my time. And, you know, this is meant to be a time for peace. So, you know, why don't I just let go of this thought and try and be more wholesome, you know, develop some peace or use a mantra or find some way of actually being with the meditation. So that's kind of seeing the danger. And then the next way of dealing with thoughts, it's not that we always do this, it's just like sometimes it's a teaching that can be used. And next way of dealing with thoughts is to try and forget it. Just go, forget about it. Doesn't matter. You know, what's the point of thinking it now? You know, I could think anything in the world, my mind is just clinging on to something. Forget about it. And the next one is the volition. So volition is, so the mind just wants to be luminous and happy on its own. But then volition is what sends the mind out into the world. So it's like that inclination towards action. And so we actually relinquish the volition. It's that point of the mind wanting to move. And so that's another one. And then the last one, the Buddha said, well then, if none of those work, then you clench your teeth together and you push the tongue against the roof of your mouth and you beat mind down with mind. After a few minutes, you get exhausted, but... But by the time, can you imagine a little kid, if every time, you know, they didn't do what you said, you gave them one of these things to do? By the time they get to the fifth one, the kid's just going to give up. And our mind's the same. So I think that's the process of just being skillful. And then eventually, because you've given the mind so many different things to do, it'll just naturally find whatever is the proper means to deal with the meditation. And the point of mentioning that is that for some people, peace is not an easy thing to develop. And so having some tools of how to deal with the mind, particularly Westerners, can get very stuck in their heads, a lot of thinking. And so it's useful to know that contemplating the hindrances or doing this contemplation, or even just focusing on peace, trying to, you know, imagine yourself that your meditation is an extremely peaceful place. And then they're things that bring you into the present so you can actually calm down enough to make use of the time of meditation. And then another good skillful means is trying to meditate at a time of day that is quiet. So like waking up early in the morning or later in the evening when the house is quiet or something like that. So that way you're not being disturbed. I mean, my cat used to always want to disturb me when I was meditating, but you can't do much about that. So. But at least I had like this little area next to my bed in front of a window on the side of the bed, which I would never walk. So I had a little shrine and like an air purifier and some incense. And that would be, so that was like my meditation spot. And so a useful thing about having a time of day that you meditate is that it's like your mind starts to prepare for the meditation. It knows, it's time to meditate. And then it's like it's another way of your mind preparing itself, because it will know, okay, at this time of the day, I'm usually peaceful. So you've kind of built up this schedule or pattern for yourself to tune into peacefulness. And then, of course, building mindfulness through the day. So the normal kind of mindfulness is called mindfulness and clear comprehension, sati sampajanya. And sati, so sati is like presence of mind. So literally, we're knowing where our mind is. Now, what is our mind doing? Is our mind thinking? Is it feeling? Is it angry? And are we in? Are we being aware of the body? Are we walking? Are we washing the dishes? It's coming into the present moment and encapsulating our experience with mindfulness. And then the more we can do that through the day, I mean, actually, the Buddha said for somebody to become enlightened, they have to have unremitting mindfulness for 7 years or 7 months or 7 weeks or even 7 days. So it's actually that power of unremitting mindfulness that then uses the teachings of a Buddha to realize existence as it actually is, that then realizes enlightenment. But, you know, a practical thing for us in daily life is that we need to be more mindful through the day. And then, so rather than seeing our meditation as something that we do and then that's it, the way Ajahn Chah would say is that outside of the meditation, you're just changing posture. So it's like our normal meditation is formal meditation practice. But when we get up from our meditation or finish our walking or standing meditation or whatever it is, then that's just a changing of formal posture. We should actually train ourselves to then continue that mindfulness throughout the day and the other things that we're doing. And then that's where the sila or the virtuous behavior comes in, because that helps us maintain a standard. So the mind is more blameless, doesn't need to think as much. And then even like the refine area, when we start to giving up idle chatter, because, you know, as one teacher told me once, idle chatter is like eating potato chips. You can eat them all day, but they're not very good for you. And idle chatter is the same, because we can get into arguments because we lose our mindfulness, or we can talk so much that we're just groping in our minds to say things. So we end up saying things that are very unmeaningful and even sometimes damaging. And so a practice of learning to be more quiet and enjoy quiet means that we start to give more power to words, that we see that words are actually important. So when we use words, we use them in a meaningful way. And then we're enriching our lives and we're enriching the lives of people around us, because we're using our truthfulness and our mindfulness to be more careful in our actions. So satya is the truthfulness and adhitana is determination. So it doesn't have to be major things. It can just be like, as I've said in the past, just we choose one activity and then we say, okay, every time we make a cup of tea, that's going to be a time where we're mindful. So then, you know, okay, I'm going to make my cup of tea now. That's right, I have to be mindful. That's my determination, remember? And then you go, okay, now I'm going to be aware of walking towards the kettle. My feet are moving. And now I'm going to be aware of my arms picking up the kettle, pouring the water. So mindfulness is just a process of training ourselves to be aware of what we're doing, you know, and coming fully into the present moment. And then if a thought arises, we be aware that it's just a thought, you know. The past is gone. The future is yet to come. So the thoughts that we have, they have more power than we think. So because the mind wants to believe the stories that it tells itself. So the past and the future have a place, you know. And we have our memories there. and we learn from our actions, and we plan the future, and we better our actions through an understanding of the past and the future. But actually, neither of them exist in the present moment. You know, in the past did exist, in the future and the present didn't. In the future will exist, and the past and the present won't. And in the present does exist, but the future and the past don't. So the idea is, though, when we focus on the present moment, doesn't mean that we don't have to think, but we just know that the monkey has gone off to the forest. You know? The monkey is doing what monkeys do, and it's got lost in the forest of thought. And so that's mindfulness. And then the more we train that, then the more, by having mindfulness of our body, like the Buddha would even teach us, like when you're about to go somewhere, so go, okay, so now I'm going to the shops. And then so you have this whole process of you going to the shops. And then when you're done at the shops, you go, okay, now I'm going home. And then you have this whole process of going home. So it's like we build little encapsulated periods of mindfulness so we know what we're doing. And then that helps us from just following the monkey mind. Because the monkey mind is what really drives most people's minds because they haven't yet got a foundation in mindfulness. So finding our means for meditation. So I think it's important when we're meditating is learn just to start out with a comfortable position. And then if you want to learn to sit cross-legged or, you know, have more formal postures, and you just build that posture up slowly. Because obviously you don't want to injure yourself. And also, like I like Ajahn Brahm's method with taking time to relax the body to begin with, because it's a way of calm. When you calm down the body, it's a way of calming down the mind. They're interconnected. And then just over time, we find what meditation objects works with us. Most people don't work well with a lot of meditation objects, so it's good to... Now, fine, if you do breath meditation, what is the way of breath meditation that works best for you? And obviously it needs a bit of experimentation, but at the very minimum you have to try and stick with your meditation object for the meditation. And even better if you can do it over like a week or something to give it a trial. And so as I told you, the two that I did plus the breath. Yeah, in the Visuddhi Magga, in the Vimutti Magga, which is an ancient text, when they're talking about breath meditation, they say it's like a feeling of cotton wool. So you get kind of got this idea of it's the soft feeling that you're trying to connect with. So like the more we meditate, yes, we're watching the breath, but we're trying to also start to tune into the feeling of the breath. So it's like a soft, peaceful feeling. And then the more we can tune into that, then that'll build a foundation in our meditation. And then as Ajahn Chah said, the mind won't get lost. Then if thoughts arise, they arise in the calm. And so the more we practice, then we can have this calm through the day, and then we can actually have enough mindfulness that the thoughts and the things that happen are arising in the calm. And even if terrible things happen around us, we don't have to get mentally affected by it. So we start to experience, you know, this kind of internal weather system. So that's the Dhamma talk. So we'll do a guided meditation. So get ourselves in a comfortable position. If you want, you can be in a painful position if you want, but I don't recommend it. Comfortable but upright. At least have a mental attitude of being awake and relaxed. And just become aware of the position of the body and see if we can make it a little bit more comfortable. The feet, the arms, the back, the shoulders. Need to stretch anything. and just set up our mindfulness just to be content with the meditation for the next half an hour. Whatever happens is good enough. Come into the present. Put down the past. Past is gone. You can let it go. Put down the future. Future hasn't yet happened. Right here in the present, just bring some peace and tranquility into the present moment. We don't need to react to our sense objects. We can just be with the peacefulness of our meditation. You can start by relaxing the toes if you like, and the feet. The ankles, the lower legs. The knees, all relaxed, peaceful and at ease. Like soft clouds fading away. Relax the thighs, bit by bit, so they're completely at ease. The hips and the waist. Everything in this region, like soft clouds, fading away. Relax the belly. Just become aware of the belly from inside out as it rises and falls with the breath. Rising with an in-breath, falling with an out-breath. Some people watch the breath at the belly because it's very grounding. Just take a moment to tune into the breath at the belly. Tuning into peace, the rising and falling of the belly. As the breath comes in and out. Relax the diaphragm, solar plexus, the lungs. Just become aware of the lungs as they fill up and empty. I'd like to take a few deeper breaths just to relax and let go of any tension. Just becoming aware of the vitality and relaxation as the lungs fill up and empty. Tuning into peace, accepting whatever is. Relax the heart. So imagine a blue sky stretching, slight smile stretching across the sky. Relax the heart deeply. letting go of any lingering concerns and restlessness. Relax the chest, the lower back and sides, the middle back and sides, stretching into the upper back, all the muscles, tendons, everything in the upper back is permeating it with relaxation. Any tension stretching out. Just allowing the tingly relaxation to spread through the shoulders. All remaining tension unwinding. So shoulders become soft like clouds. All tension, all difficulty fading away. And just aware of the sensation of relaxation spreading through the shoulders. Relax the tips of the shoulders into the joints, into the upper arms, down to the elbows. Relaxing the elbows, the joints into the lower arms, down to the joints of the wrist, into the bones of the hands themselves, into the bones of the fingers themselves, into the tips of the fingers. Permeating the arms, hands and fingers, the relaxation. Like soft clouds fading away. The peace of relaxation. Deeply suffusing the arms. Relax the neck. The neck holds up our head all day and we never think of it. So take some time to relax the neck. So much tension can be held in the neck. Really let it relax and stretch. Feel the neck suffused with relaxation. Like soft clouds fading away. Relax the tip of the chin, the lower jaw, the back of the jaw, the gums, the teeth, the tongue down to the root, the lips. Relax around the lips, the upper cheeks, the cheekbones. The whole of the jaw and the cheeks and the mouth, under the nostrils. Nostrils, the nose itself. The ridge of the nose. Relax out under the eyes, the bags of the eyes, as if all tiredness, worry, heaviness of the bags of the eyes vanish. Relax the eyelids, the eyelashes. I've noticed a slight smile at the corners of the eyes. A smile of peace and relaxation. Relax the eyes themselves. Permeate the eyes with peace, welcoming, friendliness and relaxation. Relaxing our physical eyes. And also, the eyes are a place of spiritual vision. So just relaxing the eyes completely. Relax the eyebrows, the forehead. If we're depressed and worried, then we see these lines of worry, these furrows of worry on the forehead. So just take time to relax the forehead. There's nothing in the world we need to worry about. Now is a time for peace. Let the forehead relax deeply. We relinquish all cares in the world. Relax the temples, the top of the head, the ears and the sides of the head, the back of the head, the whole of the head from inside out, the whole of the neck from inside out, shoulders and arms from inside out, the chest, torso from inside out, the waist and legs from inside out, the whole body filled with relaxation. Any lingering feelings, we just welcome. It's good enough. Take out the dart of worry. Just bring peace to whatever is remaining. Allow the body to look after itself for the rest of the meditation. If it needs to move or stretch, we just let it do it quietly on its own without disturbing us. Bring our attention to the heart, the experience of our mind in the present moment. Just take a moment, seeing what our mental landscape is at the moment, bringing some kindness to our present experience. Just a thought of wishing ourselves well. Even sometimes if meditation is difficult, or if it's good, we can still wish ourselves well. Like we wish friends well, we can wish ourselves well. It's friendliness and kindness towards ourselves. Now is the time to take up your meditation object if you have a favorite one. Or I'll guide a meditation for a while if you prefer. Become aware of the breath as it comes in or goes out. Some people watch at the lip, the roof of the mouth, the nostrils. Some people follow the flow of the breath. Some people watch at the heart or the belly. Whatever seems most suitable for ourselves, we take up the meditation object. Mindfully aware of an in-breath. What's its feeling? What's its texture? What's its temperature? Become interested. Mindfully aware of the out-breath. Once we start to settle into the meditation at our chosen point of focus, make sure we relax. Meditation is like a place of peace, like a sacred forest. Set up an attitude, and we have peace, mindfulness, alertness, and relaxation. Whatever happens is good enough. We're content just to try. If you'd like a mantra, you can use Buddho, Bud with the in-breath, Do with the out-breath, or peaceful. Peaceful, peaceful. Very simple skill. Just having patience and gentleness. Mindful of an in-breath, mindful of an out-breath. This feeling of cotton wool, soft and delicate feeling. I'll be silent for the next several minutes. We just do our best to kindly and gently be with the meditation as a place of peace. And how does it feel after half an hour of meditation? Take time to learn the things that work so we become skilled. Thank ourselves for the willingness to practice. And share mudita, sense of joy and celebration and good actions to all beings everywhere. May all beings be joyful and know peace. Now let us chant the verses of sharing and aspiration. Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and gods of great virtues, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless. Through the goodness that arises from my practice and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease and all harmful states of mind until I realize nirvana in every kind of birth. May I have an upright mind with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge, unsurpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled. Blessing.
Bhavatu sabba mangalam rakhantu sabba devata sabba bhutanu bhavena sadha soti bhavantu te. Bhavatu sabba mangalam rakhantu sabba devata sabba dhammanu bhavena sadha soti bhavantu te. Bhavatu sabba mangalam rakhantu sabba devata sabba sanghanu bhavena sadha soti bhavantu te.
Sadhu, sadhu.